Blog Talk Radio.
And you are here today because anyone who ever bet against you was wrong. Because any obstacle that ever dared get in your way, no matter how invincible it may have seemed, it was defeated by your innate power to overcome. You are here today because you are powerful beyond measure. Stop denying yourself of this truth. Your greatest self has been waiting your entire life. Don't you dare make it wait any longer.
A Better Today welcomes you to Empowered Living, Life, the Truth, and Being Free with host, speaker, writer, and personal coach, Steve Maraboli. Steve and his expert guests take you on a quest for truth and highlight philosophies and strategies that help you release your greatest self. It's time to focus on your potential instead of your limitations. Here's your host, Steve Maraboli.
Hey, welcome. You're listening to Empowered Living Life, the Truth, and Being Free. I'm your host, Steve Maraboli. You are welcome to participate with this show no matter where in the world you're listening, no matter how you're listening. You can participate through AOL Instant Messenger. The screen name is ABT Radio Show. That's one word, ABT Radio Show. You could also participate through our website, empoweredlivingradio.com. That's empoweredlivingradio.com. What a show we have for you. Thank you to everybody listening. This show is listened to in over 100 countries. Hundreds of thousands of people listening to this show. We have over 1,000 hours of radio going on and 100% word of mouth. So thank you to everybody for sharing the information in the show. And thank you so much for giving me the honor to be the host of this fantastic show today. We got a great show. We've talked about ancient aliens. I've talked to you about this amazing ancient astronaut theory and its correlation with not only our new understanding of history, but its correlation with science and how it's really coming out. This show on the History Channel is incredible. Taking this theory and really putting it in the public, you know, very, very ripening the fertile soil for the possibility of that proverbial 100th monkey picking up on this and really advancing our understanding of what our history actually was. And one of the stars of this show, a featured expert, is Giorgio Tsoukalos. Giorgio is a Swiss-born Greek writer, television presenter, and proponent of the idea that ancient astronauts interacted with ancient humans. He's the publisher of Legendary Times magazine, and he's also been the director of Eric von Däniken's Center for Ancient Astronaut Research for over 12 years. He's been on the Travel Channel, his History Channel, Sci-Fi Channel, National Geographic Channel. He's been on Coast to Coast AM. I've heard him on even Joe Rogan's show, and he's a consulting producer of that fantastic history series, Ancient Aliens. An honor to have him on, Giorgio Tsoukalos. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be on the show. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. You know, it's great to have you on because we really are at a point where this theory is going mainstream. We're understanding it. Even if you don't buy into the ancient astronaut theory, you cannot help to recognize that what you and I were taught in school is absolutely incorrect. The primitive life forms that we were shown as our ancestors is incorrect. We're finding, and as you're showing in this series, that they had some incredible advanced technology. Now, you're presenting an ancient astronaut theory. For people who aren't familiar with it, please share this theory.
Well, the ancient alien theory essentially suggests that Earth has been visited by extraterrestrials in the remote past. And there is really nothing to buy into it at all, because the bottom line is that the evidence is there, the evidence is tangible, and we today could not replicate or would actually have great difficulties replicating what our ancestors allegedly did 10,000 years ago. And no, I am not one of those guys who has ever said or claimed that the pyramids, for example, were built by aliens. That is something that the skeptics always say, oh, yeah, it's that guy, that dude that says that the aliens built the pyramids. And that is such total nonsense because, that's not what the ancient Egyptians are saying. The ancient Egyptians are saying that the pyramids were, in fact, built by them, by their ancestors, but it was built with the help of the guardians of the sky, or the guardians of, the teachers from the sky. And so, you know, my question is, who were these teachers? Who were these guardians? And the short answer is that those were extraterrestrials whom our ancestors perceived to be gods, which they never were.
Are you surprised at the level of conversation this has opened, a mainstream conversation for us to look at, not only this ancient Egyptians? I mean, the show covers so many things, but opening in our own religions and watching these gods described in our sacred texts, always gods descending from the heavens. Are you surprised of what a great conversation this has opened about some things that were previously considered super sacred now actually being conversed?
No, I'm surprised because, you know, I'm experiencing this wave that Eric von Daniken already experienced in the 70s or late 60s, early 70s, where, you know, we are sort of experiencing this renaissance of the ancient astronaut theory. That's quite wonderful. And what really, gets me excited is, you know, the age of people who are interested in this, because usually, you know, you have when you go to conferences and stuff like that, the average age is like 102, but or used to be. And now, you know, people in their teens are interested into this, and also people that are, just graduating from college in degrees in archaeology and anthropology, who are, you know, huge fans of ancient aliens. I mean, yeah, all that stuff is incredibly positive. It's incredibly wonderful. And above all, in my opinion, it's also vindication that, the show has become such a hit, because when I was younger, I'm still young, obviously, but the thing is that when I was in my teens and in my late teens, early 20s, this was something that I could only talk to people in their 40s and 50s about. And now, it's something where, you know, you can pretty much talk to a whole lot of people about this stuff.
You know, you bring up when you were younger, and I remember I was listening to an interview you did. I'm not sure if it was with George Norrie or maybe it was with Joe Rogan, but you were talking about when you were young and your folks would take you to the museum and they would show you around. And I don't remember if it was your aunt or your grandma. I said, all right, well, you saw that. Now let's talk about the real history. How impactful was that? And were you brought up, on aside from that, were you brought up in some sort of traditional religious background?
Absolutely. I was totally brought up in a Catholic household where every Thursday and every Sunday, you know, Thursday I went to kids' church, on Sunday we all went together as a family and things like this. And, you know, even the woman that you were referring to earlier, it was in fact my grandmother. She would go to church too. It's just that, in order to subscribe to all this, you don't have to lose your belief in God at all. It's just that, you know, whoever or whatever was described in the Old Testament wasn't God at all. It was a misunderstood, misperceived flesh and blood extraterrestrial whom our ancestors didn't realize was just space traveler. But again, like I said, if you subscribe to the whole ancient alien theory, it makes the concept and the idea of God even more magnificent than it already is, because it means that we're not alone in the universe, that creation is way bigger than what we thought of. And, you know, it's something, because a lot of people are like, okay, so you believe in aliens, that means you're an atheist. And, you know, I really sometimes don't even know how to react to those questions or to those observations, because, you know, it's so far from the truth, it's not even funny, because you don't have to, lose your belief in God at all if you, you know, talk about the ancient aliens. And number two, like I said earlier, it just makes everything way more magnificent. Because right now, if we were to subscribe to the idea that we're alone in the universe, well, that to me is an insult in the face of creation, because that means that, you know, she couldn't do any better. And I refuse to subscribe to that.
Yeah, you make a great point. I think if anything, this information that you're gathering, and would if it does anything, it would enhance your understanding, perception, and image of God.
Yes, no, absolutely. And then, of course, you know, you can because in my opinion, I think that even extraterrestrials have the same questions about life, death, religion, and God, and things like that. But, you know, also extraterrestrials aren't, you know, that more quote-unquote advanced than we are, except for one single thing, and that is technology. And maybe they're a bit more advanced because they are, you know, potentially a bit more evolved from a moral perspective or from a philosophical perspective and things like that. But overall, the lifelong questions aren't reserved just for the human race, but for all the races that exist throughout the entire universe.
Folks, we're having a conversation with Giorgio Tsoukalos. He is one of the stars and consulting producer of the television series Ancient Aliens. His website is legendarytimes.com. That's legendarytimes.com. If you have a question, you could do instant feedback at AOL Instant Messenger. The screen name is ABT Radio Show, or you could feedback through our website, empoweredlivingradio.com. If you're listening to the show through our website, you can just click on Giorgio's name. It'll take you right to legendarytimes.com, and you can browse. It opens a new window, so it doesn't interfere with the show at all. So, Giorgio, you've been going around, you've been touring, and I would imagine that you encounter some debate, some people who simply don't believe. What, two things. One, what is the strongest argument you've heard against ancient astronaut theory? Like something they ask or say that you can't really answer yet.
Oh, right. Well, to be honest with you, from the debunker side, every single argument that they put forward, every single one of them can be debunked or can be, you know, answered with a piece of evidence that they have simply chosen to ignore. And, you know, quite honestly, the debunkers, you know, I really could care less what they're doing or what they're saying, because the bottom line is that I am, and this is what many people are surprised by what I'm about to tell you, is that I am a skeptic. You know, I don't think everything that I see as, you know, this is, you know, unquestioningly. I look at the evidence, I debate it, I look at it and I say, hey, you know, this is feasible. And no, some other stuff is absolutely ridiculous. And, you know, so I have a very, you know, healthy approach in looking at the stuff and be like, all right, this could conceivably be feasible, while some other stuff is complete, you know, nonsense. Where, you know, what's really unfortunate is that in the field that I'm in, a lot of times, a lot of nonsense is regarded to be true. And that's, you know, wonderful, I guess, for some people. But I think it's also a great, great disservice to this whole field, because you don't have to make, because, you know, talking about ancient aliens, that already is quite an extraordinary claim. And I'm very much aware of that. So, you know, let's leave it at that, because to then make even greater and more, you know, extraordinary claims, you know, renders the whole theory even more speculative. And so personally, I try to stay away from as much speculation as possible. I only talk about the stuff that anybody can go and read, ancient texts. I only talk about the stuff that, you know, we can go and out in the field and take pictures and measure the artifacts or measure the stones and, you know, look at them from a scientific perspective. You know, how was this done 10,000 years ago, when our ancestors allegedly, according to the archaeologists, only had access to, you know, chicken bones and dental floss, and that's pretty much it. So, you know, because we today would have great difficulties in recreating some of these ancient objects. And, you know, my question is, how come nobody is doing it? How come nobody is replicating it? Because whenever they try to prove a point that, oh, yeah, a replica has been made, nobody tells the audience that the real object is 10 times the size, or even sometimes 20, 100 times the size of the original object. And just because they're able to recreate a small-scale replica doesn't mean that, you know, that applies to the larger picture.
You know, I was when I announced that you were coming on the show, of course, the skeptics that listened to my show started emailing me and, you know, how do you believe this? What do you believe? And I couldn't help. What I would send them is the link to the Puma Punku episode. To me, Puma
Punku
is, that's game over for as far as I'm concerned. Game over. How do you possibly explain it beyond that? Is this, and this question is coming from Anthony in Delaware, what is the best evidence you've encountered in support of the theory?
Oh, sure. And you know, I'm really glad that you know, that question has been asked and that you always sent that episode of a Puma Punku to your debunker.
Amazing.
Because the bottom line is, you know, there are honestly people out there who will watch Ancient Aliens and then they will write to me, you know, on Facebook or on Twitter or by email or whatever, and they'll say, you know, I really enjoy your show, but how come you guys don't present any evidence? How come you leave out all the evidence? Why are you not talking about evidence? And how do you react to that? How do you react to something where you've just been presented the evidence and then you're coming to me and you're saying and you're asking me, you know, where's the evidence? I mean, what's wrong with you? Seriously, what exactly did not register with your brain as you watched 44 minutes of evidence? And so, to me, I find that so incredibly fascinating because you're correct. Puma Punku is one of the most inexplicable sites on planet Earth, and the opinions, of course, vary. But some have suggested that the site goes back as far as 15,000 years. That's accepted opinion. And some unaccepted opinion, by unaccepted I mean by mainstream archaeology, that the site goes back as far as 28,000 years. And that is not something that these people who came up with this number pulled out of thin air. They actually translated glyphs that were in the site that is one site over from Puma Punku at Tiwanaku, where the calendar that they translated goes as far back as 28,000 years. Yet, modern-day archaeology, they look at this stuff and they're like, oh, you know, that stuff, our ancestors, they didn't know what the hell they were carving. So they made a whole bunch of mistakes as they were carving all of their ancient monuments. And that is how modern archaeology gets away with it all, by saying that our ancestors were idiots and they had nothing better to do than to carve mistakes, you know, into their monuments. And that is the greatest insult of all. When we today, or especially our archaeologists and our you know, anthropologists and all those, you know, quote-unquote wise and smart people, that they make a suggestion saying that our ancestors didn't know what the hell they were talking about, and that to me is an insult.
I think it's fascinating the amount of denial that goes on, because we are learning. We're learning so much. Just today I tweeted an article from New Scientist magazine that they found that Neanderthal dental tartar reveals the evidence that they were using medicine 50,000 years ago. That combined with the Sumerian batteries, they had electricity. We're taught that they're, you know, ooga booga. They had electricity. They're figuring out that this big pyramid might have been some sort of Tesla-esque energy source. I mean, so many things that are blatantly obvious, yet the level of denial is feverish. Does that frustrate you, or do you continue to look at the positive and just and share the information with the people who are open to it?
It does not frustrate me one bit, because, look, it used to frustrate me 10 years ago, 15 years ago, 20 years ago. It used to frustrate me because I would be like, how can you not see this? It's so obvious. It's so in your face. I mean, you know, what is it that you don't see? And that would get me frustrated. But today, that is exactly what this is all about. What exactly is it that you don't see? Meaning that a person, no matter what you put in front of them, in the end, they have to be ready themselves. They have to be able to look at something, and then something in your brain has to go, okay, yep, there's something to be said about this. It's right here. It's right in front of me, so I can or I will accept this. Until that day, you can look at, you know, because usually the same type of people who, you know, will look at you and you tell them that the sky is blue, and then they're like, no, it's not. It's certainly not blue. Those are the same type of people. I mean, it's just, you know, being contrarian or being whatever. But no, it no longer frustrates me at all. On the contrary, I take great enjoyment in people who are talking to me or have sent me emails who have said that they used to be, you know, huge debunkers of the ancient alien theory, but now, you know, by reading Legendary Times or by watching Ancient Aliens, you know, they've expanded their mind, and there's something new to their whole being, that where this whole new world opened up for them, and they start to embrace it. And mind you, those are not, you know, people that have fallen on their heads. I mean, we're talking surgeons, we're talking attorneys, engineers, physicists, you know, all sorts of people from all walks of life. And what, they're all nuts, they're all crazy, they're all illogical. Get the hell out of here. Of course they're not. Of course they, you know, they see something and they're like, okay, this has merit. And if somebody comes along and from the very get-go says that this is rubbish, let them. It's okay. They're just not ready. And you know what? That's fine.
So we're definitely moving past. You make a great point, because we're moving past that old conversation of UFOs. UFOs and the grainy pictures of UFOs. We're talking about archaeological records. We're talking about our ancestors. This isn't a guess. This is our ancestors leaving records saying, hey, this is who told us this. Hey, this is what we saw. These are the fiery chariots. Now, some of the stuff that we thought was symbolism was perhaps actual recordings of what was happening, these beings coming from the sky and descending from the heavens to earth. It becomes a great conversation to move past the grainy pictures of UFOs. What do you think, or how has your idea of this alien interaction changed throughout the years, throughout your research? Did you have a more simple idea of it and then move to a more complex idea? Is it a grander, older idea? How has your theory adjusted from when you first started to this day?
Well, I mean, it has most certainly evolved, but overall it has remained rather simple that, you know, it's very simple that we have been visited in the past by extraterrestrials who have essentially helped in jump-starting our civilization. And that is exactly what it says in not just one of the ancient records, but in every single old ancient record that we have. The origin stories and the creation stories, they're not similar, they're identical. And therefore, we have to look at these things and be like, all right, what exactly happened there? And so, personally, you see, a lot of my colleagues, they have this, and by that I do mean a lot of my colleagues, and I disagree with them. They put a whole bunch of, you know, a very sinister spin on it all, that we are a slave species of extraterrestrials, that we are beholden to our alien overlords and things like that. And I personally think that all of that is total nonsense. It is nothing else but fear-mongering, because the potential to do great stuff is all within us. We can do, we can get up this very second from our, you know, lazy existences and from our, you know, being lazy on the couch and things like that. I mean, we can all change our lives overnight. It's just that we have decided not to because we think, oh, it's not for anything good anyway, because I'm a slave to the system anyway. Well, if you think that, well, then the system has already won. What people don't realize is that in the end, it's the people who are in charge and not the governments, not whoever thinks that they're in charge. It's the people. And so, you know, so overall, you know, that is a very positive message. And so I think it ties in with the whole, with the whole ancient alien theory, because, you know, some of my colleagues are suggesting, for example, that the extraterrestrials will come back on the 21st of December of this year, and they're going to come and they're going to annihilate us, and they're going to conquer planet Earth, or they're going to come and they're going to harvest our souls. And, you know, it's all total nonsense. I mean, it's, and people listen to that crap and they're, and they agree with it. I mean, it's absolutely frightening. And, you know, personally, I don't subscribe to any of those ideas, especially the negative ones, or, well, and that's a negative one too, but, you know, the whole end of the world nonsense, you know, with the whole 2012 thing. I mean, the Maya never said that the world was going to end. The Maya said, you know, a period of time is coming to an end, and then a new period of time begins. But, you know, it's absolutely awful how much, you know, some of my colleagues are taking advantage of the gullible masses who, you know, subscribe to the idea that the world will end in 2012. And it won't. I mean, the biggest fear that we have to have is the giant hangover we'll all be suffering on the 22nd of December. That's about it.
I agree, and you're absolutely right. And you do, you hear those theories, and within those theories, when you say that you feel that they came and jumpstart, they helped us, advancing us in technology, do you also feel that there is, as described in let's say the book of Genesis and Genesis chapter 6, where the sons of the gods came to the daughters of the earth, do you feel that there was some genetic enhancements as well?
Of course, and that is one of the basic tenets of the ancient alien theory, that basically proposes that at some point a targeted mutation of our genes took place quite deliberately, where whoever or whatever showed up on our planet saw that one of our human ancestors, in this case Homo sapiens, had potential. And so this is when all of a sudden we became Homo sapiens sapiens, because we have to remind ourselves that at some point Homo sapiens coexisted with Neanderthal. Now, if survival of the fittest, Darwin himself, but you know, when Darwin wrote The Descent of Man, that book contained the words survival of the fittest in there twice, and it contained the words loving and sharing and doing it together like 100 times or something crazy like this. So the whole idea of if survival of the fittest were true, then at the time when the Neanderthal was coexisting with Homo sapiens, for all intents and purposes, Neanderthal should have conquered Homo sapiens, because they were stronger, they had bigger brains, and they were more suited, quote-unquote, for survival. Yet Homo sapiens survived. Why? So there's a very concise reason for this, because about 50,000 years ago, our brain volume tripled in size. And no geneticist to this day can give a concise reason as to why that happened, unless you take into consideration that it was done deliberately. Now, you have a whole bunch of people who are on, you know, the extreme left field. They're all about science, and the extreme right field, they're all about religion. And so you have religionist geneticists or religious geneticists who are working on this stuff, and they're like, well, obviously this had something to do with God, and it was the God from the Old Testament, not taking into consideration that whatever or whoever was described in the Old Testament was anything but God, that our ancestors were in fact visited by flesh and blood extraterrestrials whom our ancestors misinterpret or misperceived as having been God or gods, which, by the way, and you of course know this, they never were. We were never visited by God. We were never visited by gods either. It was just something that our ancestors misperceived. And look, Arthur C. Clarke, he best described the ancient alien theory when he wrote his most famous quote, and that goes by, you know, any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic. And that's what that is all about. That's what this theory is all about, that our ancestors thought that what they were witnessing was magic, something spiritual, something divine, when in reality it was nothing else but you know, nuts and bolts technology that they, not because that they didn't understand, not because they were intellectually compromised, but technologically. Compromised. They were technologically primitive, not intellectually primitive. God forbid, of course not. They were as intelligent as we are today, but their frame of reference was way smaller, and also their collective knowledge was infinitely smaller than the collective knowledge that we have gathered as a society today.
And it's a powerful thing, too, because as we understand in my field now, neuroscience and neuropsychology, we understand, folks, that the brain will absolutely, we do that today when we don't understand something. Well, our brain doesn't let us, you know, it doesn't want to explode at our conceptualizing this. What it does, it says words like miracle or magic. We do that today. And I want to get a little further into this, but first I want to remind everybody that we're speaking to Giorgio Tsoukalos. Giorgio is a consultant producer of the great series on History Channel, Ancient Aliens. His website is legendarytimes.com. That's legendarytimes.com. Giorgio has been the director of the Eric Van Daniken Center for Ancient Astronaut Research for over 12 years, and he is the publisher of Legendary Times magazine. Again, the website is legendarytimes.com. You know, Giorgio, one of the things that did it for me, and I too am a natural skeptic, and about as rational a human being as I think there is. What got it for me was one of the episodes early in the series, and it may have even been the first that special that History Channel did before the series even started. They did like a 2-hour special on Ancient Aliens.
Yeah, that was the first 2-hour special that is now called God's Chariots and Beyond. Yes, and that is the special that we. Where we now, have arrived at season 4. We're still in the middle of season 4. We have 5 more episodes left of season 4, all of which will be aired, by the way, either in October or September of this year. And I'm happy to announce to our audience that we've just been approved for season 5. So this is all very exciting.
It is exciting, and that first series, what really tipped me over was, I think it was David Childress, as he talked about that cargo cult theory. And when you talk about the cargo cult phenomenon, then you say, holy shit, this could absolutely be what happened. This could be, as they would describe cargo cults recently, it could easily be the same phenomenon attributed to our ancestors, instead using the same word. God's visited us. God told us this. When in fact, as you're saying, it's flesh and bones, being of just a higher technological breath.
Right, and I think that's really wonderful that you should mention that, because I would urge anyone to go and look up the term cargo cult on Google or wherever. And the very quick definition of a cargo cult is very simple, and that is it's a term that's taken out of ethnology. So it's not something that you and I just pulled out of thin air, but it's actually a scientific term that describes a phenomenon. And actually it's a very real phenomenon where if a technologically primitive society all of a sudden comes in contact with a technologically advanced society, over time, the technologically primitive society begins to worship the technologically advanced society. Now, mind you, I said technologically advanced. I didn't say intellectually advanced. And therein lies a big difference. And so in the Second World War, when the U.S. entered World War II, they had to set up bases in the South Pacific. And that was the first time that the native populations there ever got in contact with an outside population for the first time. And so they were, at first, when the Americans showed up with their, you know, floating islands, with their big ships and with their planes and some such, they, of course, were frightened the first, couple of weeks or so. But then they realized that the Americans wanted no quarrels with them, but that they were just hanging out and they were using their island for a base, and that was it. And so the natives started to talk to them, and they realized that the Americans were nice, and they gave them cans of corned beef and chewing gum and just, you know, a whole bunch of goods, or another word for goods is cargo, gifts. And so now fast forward 10 years into the future, and these university professors here in the States were wondering, hey, whatever happened to those natives that the Americans were exposed or that the Americans met in the Second World War? So they went on an expedition, they checked it out, and where the Americans had left behind their airstrips, their makeshift airstrips, the natives had built planes made out of wood and straw, worshiping those planes every night. And the ethnologists were like, what are you doing? What's this all about? And they're like, oh, we're just praying for the return of our gods. And because since we're doing this, we're sure that they're going to come back. Now, the ethnologists, it took them 5 minutes to explain to them what happened in reality. And that was the last time the natives worshipped those planes. In fact, they removed them that night. And so that is cargo cult behavior. The moment that they realized what they were worshiping was, in fact, a false god, not really something divine at all, but something that was, you know, rooted in reality, you know, they intellectually immediately grasped that they were doing something that was quote-unquote wrong. So they stopped worshiping American soldiers. And so my argumentation is that if a cargo cult behavior can happen in the 20th century, why the heck could it not have happened, you know, 20, 30, 50, even 100 centuries ago? And of course, the answer is a resounding yes, that it did happen. And that is what the ancient alien theory is all about.
You know, you can't have this conversation without, of course, I'm sure you've heard this question a million times, and I'm seeing it on the feedback a lot in different forms, but basically asking if they came, if they influenced, do they check up on us, and do they come back and make adjustments? Are they still interested in us in that way?
Well, I would argue, personally, I would argue that they, in my opinion, never left. You see, a lot of times people wonder, okay, so you talk about ancient aliens, but why did they leave or where did they go? And I really do think that a great majority of them have left, but at the same time, I think that occasionally we are being checked up upon. Potentially, who knows, maybe there's even somebody in our solar system who is currently watching us or observing us, because if we are what I think we are, the offspring of an extraterrestrial race, then, of course, just like we are interested in, you know, figuring out what the development is of our children or of whomever, or a project that we helped launch or something like this, will never just completely walk away from it. We'll always be interested in how everything plays out. And so, you know, since we are, according to the ancient astronaut theory, the offspring of extraterrestrials by a genetic mutation of our genes, which means, by the way, we're all hybrids, we're all half human, half extraterrestrial, by the way, that, you know, this is something where, you know, all those current UFO stories, modern UFO stuff that we see, that, you know, even if 99.999% of all UFO cases are explainable through our own stuff, well, that still leaves us with that, you know, 0.00001% chance that whatever else there is, that's not ours. Well, then that means we're extraterrestrial, we're being visited by actual extraterrestrials. And that's quite fascinating. I think the percentage is much bigger, but I don't think that, you know, ancient aliens left us, let's say, 5,000 years ago, and then they came back, or extraterrestrials came back, you know, in 1946 or 47 with Roswell. I think, you know, there was also stuff in between, and we can see in pictures or paintings, actually, from the Middle Ages, how we have paintings of UFOs up in the sky and things like that. So, you know, what was that all about? And so I think that, you know, I definitely think we're being observed. I don't think that they're here in giant form. But then what the hell do I know? I have no idea, to be honest with you. But then again, I'm not worried about it, or I'm not – it doesn't concern me, because what are you going to do about it?
Right.
What are you going to do? There's absolutely – so, I mean, all these discussions, you know, blah, blah, blah. Whatever, man. If anything, and let's just hypothetically say or assume that, which I totally and utterly disagree with, but for argument's sake, let's just assume for a moment that they are volatile and hostile. What are we going to do? Are we going to, you know, send out our little fighter jets up there? I mean, right. It's completely preposterous to think that we would even have the slightest chance. And this is not, and this is why none of these scenarios will ever come to fruition, that they're going to annihilate us, because I truly think that any society who is able to travel to another planet and to seed another planet, that they at least will not quarrel, or that this is an unwritten rule somewhere, that you will at least only quarrel with a society that's at least on the similar level like you when it comes to, you know, conquering somebody else. So that it's a fair fight. Because Stephen Hawking the other day made an announcement where he said that, you know, all of the SETI program and or any program of human beings trying to get in contact with extraterrestrials should be stopped immediately, because have we forgotten what we did to the Indians, you know, Native Americans, once we came to, you know, the shores of Peru and the shores of Mexico and Central America and all those places. And, you know, and he basically takes that story and says that is exactly what will happen to us if extraterrestrials were to find out that we are here. And I disagree with him 100%, because the one logical fallacy that he makes in his argumentation is that he fails to realize that the people who came to conquer Central and South America, they weren't aliens in that sense from another planet. They were fellow human beings killing other fellow human beings. Now, we're all human beings, whether people agree on that or not. That's the fact. We are all human beings. So I think that an extraterrestrial civilization, while good and evil does permeate the entire universe, I do think that extraterrestrials fight or have wars with other extraterrestrial species out there, but as far as their own home planet is concerned, at least they have figured out that you do not kill your own. And that is something that we have not even approached yet. I mean, all of us on this planet know that it's wrong to kill a fellow human being. Is anybody adhering to it by and large? Well, by and large, yes. But, you know, whenever there's a situation arising with a war or something, right, then all of a sudden everybody has forgotten that idea.
You're absolutely right, folks. We're speaking to Giorgio Tsoukalos. Giorgio is the consulting producer of the television series on the History Channel, Ancient Aliens. He's also the publisher of Legendary Times magazine. His website is legendarytimes.com, legendarytimes.com. Giorgio, there's a school of thought, this panspermia school of thought, that Earth was seeded by this bacteria or life from asteroids from places like Mars and other places in the solar system. And Flacey in New York is asking about this human origins and what your opinion is on human origins and this panspermia theory.
Well, panspermia is, you see, there's two ways, panspermia, and then there is one term, and then the other term is directed panspermia. Panspermia basically means that life was brought here elsewhere by a quote-unquote natural way, you know, on the backs of asteroids or meteorites, that whenever something, you know, crashed into, let's say an asteroid crashes into Earth, that by this asteroid traveling throughout the entire galaxy or potentially even the universe, that the asteroid traps certain bacteria. And wherever the asteroid then crashes into, if the conditions are right or are correct, then, you know, life essentially then will sprout from those bacteria that were riding along on that asteroid. That is sort of the very simple explanation of panspermia. And directed panspermia is a similar idea, that life was seeded here or it was brought here, but as it says, directed, it implies that it was specific or it was targeted, meaning there was intelligence behind it. So targeted panspermia means the idea is that on some other planet far, far away, another extraterrestrial or another civilization, they created thousands if not millions of tiny vials or pods that they then shot out into the universe or into the galaxy, and then basically just by the throw of some dice, they knew that if that goes somewhere directly, then, or actually, sorry, not by the throw of some dice, but actually by directing the pods to planets that are potentially suitable for life, so that those pods or those vials would land on planets like Earth. And so that is the idea behind directed panspermia. And the guys who invented that, I mean, they were astrophysicists.
Yeah.
So, again, these are not people that, you know, fell, you know, on their heads. They're highly intelligent people. So for them to make such suggestions, you know, I mean, we should listen to those people, absolutely, and I think it's highly fascinating. And so, you know, that would mean that we are, you know, one giant experiment, and as with every experiment, there's always an observer now, isn't there?
And you're absolutely right, and folks, when you hear this, I want you to do what Giorgio said before. Look some of this up. And one of the reasons we had Giorgio on, because we wanted to have a show like this for a long time, but as you know, you're in the field. It's very difficult to find somebody who isn't shooting some sort of agenda or, like you're saying, you know, jumping on the fear and taking advantage of the marketability of this. And it was tough to find someone who will actually just have a straight-up conversation about this. So we appreciate you coming on, and what's great about this, folks, is listen to what Giorgio says. Look this up. look, what he just said to panspermia, look at some of the people who are talking about this theory. One of the people who, the reason we understand DNA, one of those people says this is a viable theory, that we may, in fact, we're looking for the Martians when we may, in fact, be that. And he supports it powerfully, talking about we seem to be the only ones out of sync with Earth. We're the only ones that heard it. We're the only ones. And even our biorhythms. I was listening to a show. I'm a big nerd, a big nerd, and I read and listen all day long. And I was listening to a guy who was talking about your biorhythms. And he was, this was a completely secular, boring seminar I was listening to. And he made a joke. And if you don't watch Ancient Aliens and you don't understand this theory, that joke goes over your head. But Giorgio, this guy says, our bodies make horrible clocks because our bodies, the Earth spins at basically 24 hours in a day, but our bodies go 27, 28 hour biorhythms. And he said, it's kind of funny, we actually belong on Mars with that biorhythm because that's Mars rotation. And I said, what? Wait a second, you all just missed this. This guy is telling you your biorhythms aren't from the planet you live on. I mean, that's fascinating to me. Stuff like that, Giorgio, is so exciting. I want to know, before we go, this hour is going way too fast, I want to know what are you working on? What do you have your hands on? Like, what are you trying to learn? I'm curious about the Great Pyramid. I'm thinking they had some crazy internet electricity, Tesla style. What is it that you're really getting your claws into and hope to uncover in the next few years?
My favorite topic by far is about Pumapunku in Bolivia, where we have the most amazing of stone masonry that is completely, and I truly mean this, unparalleled all around the world. So that is definitely my favorite topic of research. But at the same time, I'm also highly fascinated about a topic that's referred to as the manna machine, or as some people refer to it, the Ark of the Covenant or the Holy Grail, where whenever you talk about the Holy Grail, you think it's the cup of Christ, when in reality, it potentially might be an extraterrestrial food dispensing machine that was given to the Israelites during their 40-year wanderings through the desert, and that was actually housed inside the Ark of the Covenant, and that we have, you know, forgotten the true origin of where we got the stories from that talk about the Holy Grail and the Ark of the Covenant and things like that. And you know, I'm happy that what you said earlier, because, you know, I would like to reiterate what you just said, that, you know, do not believe a single thing that I've just said tonight on this program, because, you know, I don't want you to go and blindly say, oh, Giorgio said it, so it must be true. Not necessarily. I want you to go and look up this stuff yourself and then make up your own mind. Because the moment that you say, oh, well, you know, Giorgio said it, so it has to be true, then we fall victim to what everyone else is doing, you know, that some dude on TV said something, so it had to be true, or it has to be true because some dude said it on TV. Now, we all know, we're all smart human beings, that is not the case, that not everything that is on TV or gasp, you know, the stuff that's in newspapers and in textbooks, you know, not everything is truly the way we think it is. And so, you know, I want everyone to, you know, go look up Pumapunku. Go look up the stones that these blocks were carved in. And then tell me whether you think it is possible that this stuff was, in fact, cut with chicken bones or bronze tools, as our mainstream archaeologists would want us to believe. Now, if you want to believe that, fine, great, have a blast. I really don't care, because if that's what you want to see in that is more power to you. But if you look at that stuff and you're like, holy crap, if we were to try to replicate this today, we would use the most gigantic and the most sophisticated of machines that are available to us today, and we would not even attempt to do any achieve anything with a bronze tool. So then why the heck did our ancestors use a bronze tool, and today we're going to replicate it with giant machines? Let's go and do it with bronze tools, just like archaeologists have said. And then we will come very quickly to the realization that a bronze tool simply did not cut it because, and no pun intended, you know, we're talking about physics here. See, that's the stuff I'm interested in. I'm interested in stuff where, you know, we today would have difficulties because, of course, our ancestors knew how to cut stone. Of course, our ancestors knew how to move stones from point A to point B. I have never denied such a thing. But what the debunkers don't say is that the stones I talk about, the stones that I want to be cut, are made of granite and they weigh, you know, 500, 600, 800 metric tons. And in case, you know, somebody is unfamiliar how much a ton is, one ton weighs 2,200 tons. One ton weighs 2,200 pounds. I'm sorry for that flub. So you go and do the math. I mean, you have 500-ton blocks that have been moved from point A to point B, and that was all done on wooden rollers and with rope. Get the hell out of here. You know, I mean, it can't be done. And I've had – and this is not me talking. This is – these are physicists and engineers, structural engineers who build constructions or monuments or buildings for a living, and they look at all this ancient stuff and they're like, you know – we would have a hard time replicating this today, yet our mainstream archaeologists claim that our ancestors did all this in loincloths, you know, with chicken bones and with a couple of bronze tools. And I say to them, get the hell out of here, become practical, and let's look at it from a perspective how this was done, you know, in reality. What technology did they have access to? And the answer is very simple, that our ancestors told us that they received help from elsewhere, and usually the help came from above.
And what you just said really hits it, Giorgio. This is the rational argument. This actually is the rational argument.
It is. You know, what gets me most of the time is that a lot of people, they always say, hey, you know, the ancient alien theory does not satisfy Occam's razor. And I say to them, nonsense, because Occam's razor suggests that usually if you have a problem, no matter what the environment or the condition, usually the simplest of solutions or the simplest of answer is usually the correct one. And if you look at all the answers that archaeology is giving us, the truth of the matter is that extraterrestrial help is the simplest solution if you look at it from a physics perspective. And so all of a sudden, you know, the ancient alien theory does, in fact, satisfy Occam's razor, whether or not the debunkers want it or not. It doesn't matter. Whatever. The debunkers, they've already lost. It's just a matter of time.
and it's true, you know, and it goes beyond even beyond the physics of it, even the psychology of it, the neuroscience of it. Folks, when you're talking about these pyramids, and you could say, oh, well, maybe they were just smarter than we think. But it's not that. It's in this field of technology. They got a hint. Because keep in mind that while building these pyramids, while building these tremendous blocks and moving them, at the same time, they thought the sun was brought up every morning in a canoe by the god Ra. So you have to understand that somewhere in there, someone whispered into their ear, something happened for their advancement in technology to be so different than their actual cultural. And then when you say, well, it remains a mystery, no, it doesn't. They tell you what the difference was. They fill in the gaps and tell you this is who taught us, this is who did. Folks, you have to understand, look into our history. Our history shows that this ancient cultures that we do know about, we're uncovering all kinds of new ancient cultures that are older than the oldest ones we thought we had. But these Sumerians, they had Pluto 6,000 years ago, 6,000 years ago, Pluto, we found it in the 1930s. They had it 6,000 years ago. Another civilization had Sirius B. We can't even see it. You can't see it with the telescope you buy. You need a professional one that NASA buys to see this thing. They had it thousands of years ago. Something else is up, and as much as you hate it, the ancient astronaut theory is the most rational answer. And wow, did this hour go fast. Giorgio, I want to first of all congratulate you on the success. I know you've been working really hard at this for many years, and to see it out there in the public and to see it being discussed on every type of show, moving beyond just the great coast-to-coast show, but moving to mainstream shows and mainstream conversations, I want to congratulate you. You are a great spokesman for this theory because you're open to it. You let go of the stuff that doesn't work. You grab onto the stuff that does, and you share the information. And not only that, but you share your enthusiasm for it. I want to thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Thank you. And, man, yes, this show has gone by so fast, and I cannot wait to do it again in the future.
Thank you so much, brother. Folks, we just had a great conversation with Giorgio Tsoukalos. Giorgio is the publisher of Legendary Times Magazine and, of course, a producer on the television series Ancient Aliens. His website is legendarytimes.com. That's legendarytimes.com. What a great conversation. This is the good stuff. Now comes the fun part. Whether you liked it, you didn't like it, you have questions, you want to debate it, that is the beauty of it. Please, please let those questions, please let that intrigue, please let that curiosity propel you off the couch towards your computer and start looking this stuff up. Look up cargo cults. Look up Sumerian cultures. Please look up Puma Pumku. What I'm going to do is I'm going to tweet tonight. I'm going to tweet Giorgio. I'm going to tweet the Puma Pumku episode on YouTube. Look at this stuff. It is incredible. At the very least, if you are the greatest skeptic to the point where you are blatantly stubborn, at the very least, you're going to realize that we have no idea how grand and majestic our history has been, and that somehow they got that information. That is a powerful place to start. Folks, what a great episode. Wow, I'm honored to be the host of this show. Giorgio Tsoukalos was a fantastic guest. Make sure you check him out on Twitter as well. If you're not sure of his Twitter address, I'll be tweeting him here in a couple minutes. Again, legendarytimes.com. That's legendarytimes.com. If you're listening through our website, just click on Giorgio's name. It'll take you right to legendarytimes.com and check out the Ancient Aliens series. Folks, you're listening to Empowered Living, Life, the Truth, and Being Free. I'm your host, Steve Maraboli. You can check out our stuff, stevemaraboli.com, empoweredlivingradio.com. I'm on Facebook. I'm on Twitter. I'm on YouTube. We're all over the place. Thank you so much for listening. You're listening to Empowered Living. I'm Steve Maraboli. We'll see you next time.
Today, we'd like to thank you for listening to Empowered Living, Life, the Truth, and Being Free.